It's Wild Weekly on the Fan.
Pass it from Kaprizov, Johnson scores!
Now here to talk about the Minnesota Wild and the NHL, from the Wild, Kevin Faulness, and from the Fan, Brandon Molesky.
Hey, good evening. Welcome to KFAN Wild Weekly. Brandon Molesky here from the Fan, Kevin Faulness from the Wild Radio Network, joining us for the next half hour here, talking Minnesota Wild hockey. Kevin, how you doing tonight?
I think I'm okay. Thank you, sir.
The Wild are in a little bit of a tough spot now, Kevin. You know, we've been talking about this been kind of an uphill climb all season long after kind of that early stretch in the season where they struggled and put themselves behind the eight ball here. And it looks like they're climbing a big mountain now. They're 8 points behind Vegas after, of course, Vegas and St. Louis playing a three-point game last night, which makes it challenging. But after that loss in overtime to St. Louis on Saturday, all of a sudden, eight points behind Vegas, 3 points behind St. Louis, only 11 games to go. It's pretty challenging in the way NHL points are now handed out to make up 8 points and jump two teams in just 11 games.
Yeah, it's too bad that it has come down to this. They've actually played some pretty decent hockey, but, I mean, even the last two games against the Blues, you could say that's pretty much the death nail. The fact that they only got 1 point in each of those contests and the Blues walked away with two. Yeah, you still have two head-to-head matchups with the Vegas Golden Knights, but that's not going to do anything to help you get past St. Louis now in the standings. So, yeah, unfortunately, it feels like they've reached a dead end, which is too bad. The good part is, you know, for the most part, up until this point, this has been competitive hockey, and they've had hockey that's meant something. And, you know, think of what San Jose or Chicago or Anaheim's gone through with all this hockey that's meant absolutely nothing for almost the entire season. At least they've made it mean something for the majority of March, but I think the rest of the way, it looks pretty daunting.
Well, those teams are in the running for a top NHL draft pick, though, Kevin. So.
Yeah, I know, but still, that doesn't do anything.
You could have Bedard and potentially another number one pick in back-to-back years.
100%, and I totally get that.
That's how dynasties are made.
But at the same time, for a person who's got to watch every single game, I'd prefer to have the competitive fight in each and every game and tooth and nail and fighting for your playoff lives, and it looks like that's going to dissipate here real quick.
11 games to go. I think they got to win 10 of them. And obviously you have to win both against Vegas and have to win both in regulation. But because you have two teams to jump, you know, is it possible you don't have to win 10? Sure. But given how far back you are, I mean, I think they just almost have to go on a magical run here.
Yeah, and that's the frustrating thing about watching last night. St. Louis scores late in regulation, then Vegas ends up scoring in overtime with Marceau once again. And like you say, it's one of those three-point games. And unfortunately, that's the position the Wild have put themselves in. That real bad stretch of hockey coming into the new year when they were missing seven key guys to their lineup. That didn't help. You know, the way the season started with getting Dean Evason fired, all this has caught up to them. And, you know, it was going to be a big hill to climb anyway, but now the way things are stacking up, it would seem almost impossible.
I've been doing Wild Weekly with you for a lot of years, Kevin, and you and I have spent a lot of time talking about how great Kirill Kaprizov is. But if you want to take a positive out of this run they've had, he's been absolutely terrific. I mean, with the guys they have out of the lineup, with Joel Eriksson-Ek and Jonas Brodin missing, you know, he's in the St. Louis game alone, the amount of, like, top-notch, grade-A passes he made in that game, I mean, I could count five or six that just led to premier scoring chances for his team, some of them to go in. He's been terrific for a long time now, and he was terrific against St. Louis.
Yeah, I mean, the points are ridiculous, and what he's doing with the puck, it's so much fun to watch. It's, you know, I think we've been talking about this on the broadcast a little bit. When he was drafted in 2015, nobody knew anything about Kirill Kaprizov. He was just a name. And in fact, at the time, it was Kaprizov, and he was over in the KHL, and they tell us how great he is and all that, but you know, how much of that is, you know, them seeing him through their prospect's eyes versus what the reality is. And he comes over here, and he's been phenomenal from day one when he scores the overtime winner against L.A. to the point where he is now. It's just, it's awesome to have an actual game breaker on the team. Not a guy that's pretty good or, you know, in the top 50 in the NHL. I mean, this is a top 5, top 10 talent in the NHL. And I don't think anyone can argue that. He's up there with the best of the best and what he can do to set guys up and to be a finisher.
I tell you what, too, we're getting a little Russian pipeline. Like, forever, the Minnesota Wild, it seemed like they never had Russians. And Kaprizov was the first. I know it was a struggle to get him over here, but once we did, obviously, we've reaped the reward of that. But Husnadinov is now over here. They drafted Yurov in the first round, and he's had a very good run so far playing over in Russia. And then Vladislav Firstov is a Wild prospect who's now with the Iowa Wild. So you got, potentially up to four Russian players could be on this team within the next couple of years.
Yeah, and for good reason. They're real high on Husnadinov, a guy that they have pegged as a middle six forward. So probably, you know, most like your third line center. And if he's your third line center, he's going to be real good as your third line center. A guy who can, you know, play both ends of the ice. He can also be physical to a degree. I was surprised how small he is, but he doesn't play that small. And he, obviously he can win faceoffs, which is something that is incredibly badly needed for this team. And then they tell me Yurov is even better and what he's been doing. Again, I don't know anything about him other than what the Brad Bombardiers, the Matt Hendrixes, and people who have watched this kid in person will tell you. But they say that he's going to be a guy that's going to be in your top six, and that's fantastic. So, that you know, there's good days to come here for this team, not only with those guys, but some of the other prospects, the Riley Heights, as these guys continue to develop on the blue line in Iowa. And then, of course, Jesper Volstead. There's some Liam Ohlgren, didn't even mention him. There's some big names coming in the next year, next few years.
Yeah, Yurov and Husnadinov, they're different types of players. As you mentioned, Yurov is going to be probably more of a top six skilled guy, and, you know, scoring goals, getting assists for you. Whereas Husnadinov, I almost look at him more as, man, I hope I'm not way off on this projection or comparable, but he kind of reminds me of like a left-handed Wes Walls to a certain extent, right? Like he can skate like the wind, but he's not the tallest guy, but he's got some, like, even for his age, he's got some build to him. Like, he's stocky. He's got some muscle to him. So I kind of, right now, kind of looks like, and he's left-handed. I get that's completely different than what Wes Walls look like. But I'm going with the Wes Walls comparison right now with Husnadinov.
I think that's as good a comparison as you can get. That wouldn't bother me at all. And again, if he's a guy that's going to be the center point on your third line and that's where he ends up staying, I think that's fantastic. He, you know, a guy who could probably jump up to the second line if needed. I'm sure could play on the fourth line as well. But you know, that, it's a spot that you need filled, and it's a guy especially if he can win faceoffs and be a good mentor on the penalty kill, that'd be great for this team.
What do you see with the blue line moving forward, and not even just the rest of the season, but even in the future here, right? With Brock Faber, I think. Pretty sure he's probably going to get paid a lot of money in the offseason, is going to be here for a long, long time. But Brodin, Spurgeon, you know, there's been criticism in terms of their size and how beat up they can get. And, you know, Spurgeon's been out for the good majority of the year. Brodin's been hurt multiple times. Do you have any concern with kind of your high-end blue line guys, given their ages moving forward, specifically Spurgeon, about what they're going to be able to produce here in future years?
I guess I want to see Jared Spurgeon come out of this and feeling good. It's only played 16 games this season. He's a top-level defenseman, and to not be able to have him, not only what he does defensively, but he also has that offensive punch. Is he undersized? Absolutely, and that's nothing you can do about that. He's still one of your best defensemen in the organization, and we've got to get him healthy, get him back out there on the ice. And I think when you look at the top four for next year, with Middleton, with Faber, with Brodin, and Spurgeon, they're in real good shape. And even if you move Middleton down a little bit, bounce him down to the third pair, and bring up, say, like a Damon Hunt, who can play, you know, probably in your top four, or else make one of those other guys graduate them from the Iowa Wild. You got some other blue line prospects down there in O'Rourke or Lambos, but if not, maybe give him another year of seasoning down there and continue to utilize Bogosian. That's a big body. I don't know what happens with John Merrill this upcoming season, but he, too, is a guy that can play that physical brand of hockey. And I think Middleton, of course, is also a guy who can throw him when needed. So I don't know that I'm necessarily worried about the size back there, but I'm sure it's something that Bill Guerin's always thinking about as they plan for next September and beyond.
All right, so how about Declan Chisholm? Where do you see him in the future with the Minnesota Wild? The guy that was picked up off the waiver wire from the Winnipeg Jets has played 20 games, one goal, five assists in recent games. He's been playing on that top power play unit in place of Brock Faber. You know, Kevin, he's kind of one of those guys, athletically, he looks like he has a very high ceiling, right? Like, he's super mobile, great skater, has some offensive ability to him. yet still, and he's still young, but you know, he's getting to the point where you got to start figuring it out a little bit. We'll still make some mistakes defensively, turn the puck over, lose coverage in your own zone. You can see what scouts might like in this player, because I do think he has a high ceiling. It's just, he can also be a little frustrating at times, though, with some of the decisions he makes.
Yeah, I forgot Declan Chisholm, and I think he's been a great find. When you talk about some of the when Bill Guerin's rolled the dice this year, he, you know, hit snake eyes. I think that's a good thing. He rolled a 7 with Zach Bogosian. I don't know my crap.
I don't think
lingo.
7-0 is really what you want here, Kevin, but go
so
ahead.
So then he rolled snake eyes? Is that a good thing? I don't know. Whatever the craps lingo is, he hit it big with Zach Bogosian, but they also hit on Declan Chisholm, a guy that they got off of waivers, you know, for virtually nothing, and a guy who could definitely play big minutes for you next year, and I would expect that he probably will. So I don't even know how many games he's played thus far since landing here from Winnipeg, where he was kind of dumped on the scrap heap, much like Zach Bogosian was in Tampa Bay, and both have been, you know, very valuable additions to this blue line. So, yeah, I very much look forward to seeing what the future holds for Declan Chisholm.
All right. Big home stretch starting off here. 5 games in a row on home ice. You've got the San Jose Sharks Thursday night, 7 o'clock start right here on the Fan. And then, obviously, the big one Saturday against the Vegas Golden Knights. That's an afternoon affair. Let's begin with the Sharks team, though. We just saw them a couple weeks ago, and the Wild struggled with them. They had to come back there in the third period to beat them 4-3, a bunch of Minnesota Wild connections on that team.
There are. I mean, that's a bad team right now. That's. I mean, when we talk about the bad teams in the NHL and in the Western Conference, the San Jose Sharks are the tip of the iceberg, and they make no bones about it. Yeah, you get to see Kalen Addison, you get to see Kaapo Kähkönen, but that's a team that right now, that if the Wild have any hopes, which they probably don't, but you got to win that game and you got to beat them up and you got to feel good about yourself. They're coming off an overtime win against the Blackhawks on Saturday, where they've lost. They've got 16 wins on the season, some like 30 some points on the year as well. And they're going to go into Dallas, I think they host Dallas tonight. That's a team that you should beat up on pretty good on Thursday night. Expect nothing less.
And then the big one on Saturday, the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah, that's one where you take two, you give none. And if you're coming off a win over San Jose, maybe you're still keeping hope alive.
All right, Kevin, you'll be will give us a little repeat of the Beyond the Pond with Elliot Friedman, correct? And you had to deal with Michael Russo all day on Saturday?
Yeah, Micheletti was traveling up at Bemidji for the CCHA title game with Ben Holden. They were driving back, so we actually had him on the phone. I very much suggest going back and listening to the podcast, but one of the guests that Russo and I had on Beyond the Pond on Saturday was Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet. When you talk about some of the most impressive voices in our game today, he's one of them up there in Canada. He does a fantastic job. And I know you'll do a fantastic job filling in for me. Before I say goodbye to you, I'm going out of town for some family stuff over the course of the weekend. And that means you're going to be in the Bob Kurtz Radio Center come Thursday night when the Wild hosts the San Jose Sharks. Are you excited? Are you
nervous? Best part is it's very little shoes to fill. The shoes are not big, and the bar has been set pretty low. So I'm not too concerned about it.
So glad
I'm looking
you.
Forward to it.
Good. You'll have fun. You, Tom Reed,
Do you have to spend time with Halvey, though?
No, he won't be there. He's got power trip stuff on Thursday.
Oh, that's just too bad.
Yeah.
I'm devastated.
You get the rest of the crew, though. I know you guys will have a blast. 6:45 pregame Thursday night as the Wild host of the San Jose
Sharks. All right, thanks, Kevin. He'll replay Elliot Friedman with Michael Russo and Kevin Follin this on Beyond the Pond. We replay that next right here on KFAN Wild Weekly.
Welcome back to KFAN Wild Weekly. I'm Kevin Faulness with you the rest of the way. As mentioned, this past weekend on Beyond the Pond, heard each Saturday from 10 until noon on KFAN, we talk hockey. And this past Saturday, Michael Russo filled in for Pat Micheletti, and we got a chance to talk to one of his buddies, Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet, and the same guy that does 32 Thoughts. He's on the podcast with Jeff Merrick, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet up in Canada. He's everywhere. And when you talk about a guy that's plugged into the National Hockey League, Elliot Friedman is right there at the top of the heap. We talked to Friedman and Russo about their trip down to the GM meetings down in Florida. That was the this past week, and they talked about everything going on in the league through the eyes of the general managers.
Elliot, you and I just came back from the general managers meetings, and it was funny because there was not a lot of news, but yet it felt like a lot of news because there were just so many little things. They have, you know, about 10 or 12 different types of suggestions that are going to go to the competition meeting, the committee this summer from the general managers, and then would, if approved there, be ratified by the Board of Governors. The enhanced coaches challenges possibility for next year is the most intriguing. Could you imagine being a video coach now? Like, your day job is actually to document games, to mark breakouts and neutral zone forechecks, but yet now you almost need a team of people to understand what all the rules that are going to need to be looked at in a very short span to determine if you're going to tell your head coach to challenge something starting maybe next year.
Well, you know, I was watching last night. I don't know how much you guys watched Washington, Carolina last night, but the Capitals video coach has got two hurricane goals disallowed. Like, they were the right calls, but they challenged it. And, you know, I'll say this. Like, a lot of those video coaches, they don't make a ton of money. Like, I was talking about this on the pod the other day about how valuable these people are and how they should be well paid for what they do, but... And someone called me later and he said, look, like, one of the things the teams know is that there's so many young people who want to get into coaching or get into hockey ops that the teams have the pick of people they can hire for these jobs because there's so many people who want to do it. But, like, in the situations you're talking about, if you're wrong, it's not just a power play against you. It's a 5-on-3 for 2 minutes. And I just think the people who do these jobs, they have to have ice in their veins. Because you're right. If you're right, Michael, everybody loves you. But if you make a bad challenge, think of all the people in the organization who are going to be looking at you like, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
And especially in a 5-on-3. I mean, you have to have ice in your veins to do these jobs. And it's rapidly becoming one of the most important jobs in all of hockey.
Kevin, I'll let you ask a question in a second, but this reminds me of, we were in St. Louis a couple weeks ago, Elliot, and John Hines made one of the world's worst challenges that I've ever seen, and I hammered him, all right? And then between periods, I was talking to Bill Guerin. I'm like, what was that with the challenge? He goes, blame us up here. We're the ones that told him to do it. Like, it was actually the eye in the sky and probably Billy that's, like, challenged that. And then when they looked at the replay after the challenge, I think they all realized, whoa, there was absolutely nothing there. But you need a GM that's going to be willing to take the bullet, too.
Elliot, I'm wondering, you mentioned the fact that you guys were in Florida for the GM meetings and talking about some of the places where the NHL has thrived, despite maybe some people not thinking that it would. I know another topic down there was the state of the Arizona Coyotes. Where do you see this thing going, and are they going to survive this latest blow to their franchise?
You know, like, one thing, Kevin, like, I have learned when it comes to predictions on the Coyotes, do not make predictions. Like, how many times have we said, this is it, this is the final straw, and it's never been. So the one thing I really do believe, though, Kevin, is that we are at a path right now where either they're going to figure out the arena in the short term or they're going to go and eventually come back. Like, we're at that path right now. There's only two roads to go down. One is they win and they get a new arena, or they win the auction and they start putting together plans for a new arena. And the other is, you know what, this isn't going to work here at this time, and we're going to leave, and we'll bring a team back to Arizona when we've sorted out the arena problem. I actually think there's two plans going on right now. There's the one plan which the owner says, I am determined to win this auction in June, and it's going to be in June, and I'm going to build a new arena. And the other plan is something falls apart or they don't win, and the NHL said, here's where we're going. And I think both of those plans are happening at the same time. I think so. We don't know yet what the final answer is, but the paths are being prepared for both things to take place. Like, I do think there is a plan potentially to have them somewhere else next year, and I also think there's a plan for them to play next year in Arizona with the knowledge that they're on the way to a new arena.
We know you're there in the center of the hockey universe. This is why the question I just posed to Michael when we lost you about the hunger level for a Stanley Cup in Canada. Toronto, of course, is a whole nother level.
Oh, yeah.
But you got four contenders there. You know, Toronto, I forgot about Winnipeg, too. You got Vancouver. You got Edmonton. Is this the year, finally, Canada breaks through?
You talk about hunger, Kevin. You ever eaten a two-person steak by yourself? That's what the hunger is like right now in Canada. That's exactly what, I joke right now. So I left university. I'm always careful to say I didn't graduate. I don't want anyone thinking I'm committing any fraud here. I left university in 93. That is the last time a Canadian team won the championship, won the Stanley Cup, the Montreal Canadiens. And I always say, and it's not even a joke anymore, I just want to see a Canadian team win the Stanley Cup before I get fired and run out of this business. That is my pure goal, is just seeing one of them win. And I'll say this. I think there are some teams here that are good enough to win. Like that Central Division, the whole key is not finishing second or third.
Yeah.
And not that first place is going to be a piece of cake, but it's not going to be as bad as 2-3. Like, I do think the Western representatives here, and that's going to be three Canadian teams, Winnipeg, Edmonton, and Vancouver, I think it's going to come down to who you get in the first round and what your path is and what travel you get to. Because travel can take a lot out of you in the playoffs as well. So, I think all those teams are good enough to win. I just want to see who gets what matchup.
Elliot Friedman from Beyond the Pond this past Saturday. Check it out for yourself. You can find it on the KFAN website, or you can also go on Twitter at Pondcast. Hear that entire show. Not only did we have Elliot Friedman, we also had Matt Hendricks, Marcus Foligno, and much more. Check that out at your leisure. Also, check out The Wild. They host the San Jose Sharks on Thursday, pregame at 6:45, right here on KFAN. Until next time, for Brandon Molesky, I'm Kevin Fulness. Thanks for listening to KFAN Wild Weekly.